From Westside Church in Bend, Oregon, you're listening to Behind the Message. Each week we take you behind what we teach here at Westside. I'm Ben Fleming.
And I'm Evan Earwicker, and it is great to be back here this week, back from Uganda. Which is a great experience. And we are here today with Pastor Mike Alexander, our executive pastor here at Westside. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. This is a new, we've kind of gone through a little bit of the car wash for a lot of other people. Well, we've had Steve and Bo and Corey and Casey, and we're just kind of making our way down your hallway now.
Yeah, that's it.
And speaking of car washes, a rough way to raise funds, I'll be honest. It always sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
And then you do the math.
Well, we've all done youth ministry in this room. And I think we've all... What's your worst fundraiser that you've ever done, Mike?
Oh, without a doubt, a car wash.
What was a car wash?
Oh, yeah. You toil and trouble in the sun for hours with unruly teenagers and walk away with like $78. Yeah. And you're like, man, this will send a lot of kids to Africa. Mm. No.
Mm-hmm. And after you do that, you just want to show up and just ask people for money after that. Just
Pretty much.
Can you just give it to us? Don't bring your car. Just give me the money.
Yeah.
Growing up, our church, we did a car wash with youth group. And about halfway through the day, we were using the same bucket for everything. And we realized, like, we are scratching these cars.
Oh, no.
I mean, there's gravel embedded into the mitt and just, just scratching the cars. Terrible idea. Don't wash people's cars for money.
Please don't.
Yeah.
Please don't. Well, it's been an exciting last few weeks. I actually preached this last weekend and talked about doxology to finish up our Psalm series. But a couple weeks ago, and we missed you because you took off on vacation, Mike, you got to speak on the subject of enemies, which is really, it's a topic in the Psalms that I hadn't considered before we jumped into all of this.
Yeah.
And with this topic, I love it. And it wasn't originally going to be part of the series, but we kind of added it in kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
Talk us through kind of this concept of enemies being such a central theme to the Psalms.
Yeah, it was interesting because, originally I was set for another topic, and as I toiled with it, couldn't really come up with a resolve to it. I had a conversation with another pastor who was doing a message on enemies, and it just lit the world on fire for me. Everything just started popping in my mind. It felt like God was just downloading a lot of thoughts. And the more I looked into the Psalms, the more it's like you just look everywhere, and especially in David's writings, you just see his struggle with people who were just diabolically opposed to him. I mean, this wasn't disagreements or just, mild, struggles. This was brutal, treacherous people coming against him.
Mm. And when we talk about enemies that David faces compared to enemies that we face, sometimes it's just like, this is not the same world. I get annoyed with my neighbors when they park incorrectly.
That's it.
David is facing people that are out to kill him every day, and the difference between kind of the levels of enemies in our lives. Can we actually look at enemies in our lives and compare them to the kind of enemies that David faced?
It's totally true. And even when, I think about the subject of Jesus talking about worry, and he says, you're so worried about where you're going to sleep or where you're going to, what you're going to eat. And we think of that as like, that's a great example. It's kind of extreme, Jesus. But Jesus is talking to people who are really wondering what they're going to eat and where they're going to sleep. And it's the same way with David. I didn't think about that. We're like, my enemy is the person that subtweeted me the other day.
That's right.
And not so much the person that's actually got me trapped in a cave and looking to kill me when I come out.
Yeah, and that was really what came alive for me. I had this conflict in my mind going, trying to come up with enemies that I really had or had in my life. It was really tough to come up with a true enemy. And that took me down the path of, okay, what really is a true enemy? Mm-hmm. And then also looking at so many of the things and relationships that I have run into in life that I allow to become adversarial. Mm-hmm. And without even meaning to, subconsciously, almost view people as an enemy for, like you say, trivial things. I was like, okay, wait a minute, there's something here because we all wrestle with this.
Yeah. And is there a way where enemies are acceptable? Like, I think many times we try to avoid having enemies, but in the life of David, we see, he doesn't necessarily avoid, he doesn't try to make good with all his enemies. He's calling down judgment on his enemies. He's, and so how do we approach that in our lives? Like, because my initial thing is, let's try to alleviate conflict, but that's not always what we're called to when it comes to legit enemies in our lives, right? Or is it?
Well, that's a good question. And that's, I mean, in the conversation of the message, really coming to a working definition of what an enemy was, it came down to an enemy is someone who wants to truly harm you and destroy you. This is more than someone that you disagree with or don't get along with or you rub each other the wrong way. This is someone who they, from their own motivation, want to destroy you. It's not even something necessarily you control. It comes to you. And so then the question is, okay, how do you deal with someone who is truly an enemy on that level, like David was dealing with?
But with in your message, you talked about the difference between David's enemies and then what Christ teaches us now about how to deal with enemies. And that was really challenging to me, again, because, you know, you have this Old Testament David coming at his enemies in one way, and then Christ flips that all on its head.
Yeah, and it's interesting because if you look closely at the writings and the words of Christ, he really does give us some healthy boundaries for dealing with enemies. And it becomes clear quickly that he's not calling us just to be the Christian doormat to everyone who wants to abuse and destroy us, you know? Right. It's like, oh, hold on. And yet, at the same time, he does call us to some really tough things when it comes to enemies. I mean, how do you truly love someone who wants to destroy you?
Yeah. And sometimes finding that in-between place, because it's, you're right, it's not the Christian doormat, but at the same time, we're not being, at least in my mind, we're not necessarily just trying to pick every single fight that we can when we walk out the door.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's the other side that we are called to be justice people, to help bring God's justice into the world and all of those things. And so it is that push-pull. It's so difficult. Yeah. And I think especially about the political climate that's going on today. And I think, you know, some people are standing up for something and I'm going, whoa, whoa, that's way too far. And then on the other end of the spectrum, I'm going, well, I mean, if you really believe that, then I can hardly blame you for going ahead and standing up for what you believe in, but maybe you're wrong. You know, there's just so many tentacles to this thing.
Yeah.
When, especially now in this culture today, when it seems like people are trying to pick fights and find enemies more than they ever have before, at least in my time paying attention in existence, you know?
Yeah, because again, the dialogue has switched from, hey, we disagree, and let's agree to disagree, to I disagree with you, and I'm going to do everything possible to take you out.
Right.
Yeah.
And where's that line, I guess? Because we went to war with Nazi Germany because they had crossed the line. And we said, no, you are our enemy. We don't just disagree in a philosophy or an idea, but we think this is way too far over the line, and we now choose to destroy you because of the way that you think.
Yeah.
And it is. It's finding that line. It's so stinking. I was challenged by that more than anything in the middle of your sermon, to be like, okay, I don't want to go out and just find enemies, but I have to be able to willing to go for it when there are enemies in my life that need to be taken care of, I guess. Does that sound right? That just sounded, to be taken care of. That just sounded a little
hard. Going to handle some business.
Yeah,
huh?
I am.
All right. You know? I like it.
Well, I think that Christians many times nowadays are good at picking the wrong enemies and picking fights with people who really aren't the enemies of God.
And maybe that's the biggest question, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Who are the enemies? And you kind of drew some lines about, you know, the fool and the evil person and the, what's the third?
The wise, the wise, foolish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And putting our enemies maybe in categories to really say, is this something evil that deserves to be my enemy? Mm. Or is it somebody I'm picking a fight with that is distracting me from, you know?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it comes down to, I suddenly have a feeling about you or whoever of being wronged. There's some kind of injustice done towards me, something done towards me that's going to cost me. You've hurt me. And now I've got the job of figuring out, okay, did you do that just because you're acting foolishly, acting out of your own sin, acting out of your own brokenness, etc.? Or are you doing that because you diabolically look at me and go, I hate you and I want you gone? Mm. Those are two different things. And again, I think, especially in our American, fairly westernized Christian bubble, that's a little more rare. Although in talking to people after the message, I was surprised how many people were like, yeah, no, especially in business, you hear people, and in family conflicts, how somehow they got across the line and suddenly even a family member is like, they are doing everything to destroy me legally, to destroy, you know, the constructs of our family, because they're mad, because they don't like me. It somehow crossed a line, and that's where, you know, the rubber meets the road, because the further it goes across that line, the higher the emotions are, and the tougher it is to lean into the things Christ calls us to, right? Yeah. Man, I don't really feel like loving you anymore. How do you do that? How do you stand up for what's right and justice and those kinds of things. And yet, how do you set healthy boundaries that protect you from the onslaught of someone who really is coming at you from an evil intent?
Right. And then we start to consider space a little bit too, right?
Yeah, right.
Because I think about this story that my dad always loved to pick up hitchhikers because he was a hitchhiker a lot. And
was the Uber of the day.
Yeah, he always loved to pick up hitchhikers. And he would bring them home a lot of times.
Wow.
Just so that my family could feed them and all that kind of stuff. And I guess shortly after I was born, my dad brought home a hitchhiker and he found his way into my room and picked me up and was holding me and was kind of talking in a weird sounding voice over me is what my mom describes it as. And she says from that day on, no more hitchhikers in my house. And it was like this turn because it was interesting discussion. I think it still is an interesting discussion for my parents. My dad is super benevolent. You know, he wants to reach out to people. He wants to help people. He wants to give rides. He wants to feed them. He wants to do all this stuff. And then all of a sudden there was a space issue that happened. And that completely took, and my mom is a wonderful person that's incredibly benevolent and generous as well. But it was like, all right, this is too far. Is it godly to kind of have that line where we say, all right, maybe in my car, but not in my house, or maybe on the street, but not in my car? You know, is it godly to kind of create that? Is that what you're talking about, those boundaries?
Yeah. And that's a great example. And the extremity of it helps us go, whoa, okay, yeah, how would I do that? How would I set healthy boundaries that protects my son from this person who appears to have really ill intent, mm-hmm. whether it's evil or not, not sure yet. How do I have healthy boundaries? But how do I still follow in the ways of Christ who said, I'm calling you to love them, to pray for them, to do good for them? Those were his exact words. Mm-hmm. How do you do both? And really, you know, let's bring this into our world context right now. This has been one of the biggest challenges for the Christian world to wrestle with related mm-hmm. to the immigration issue. How do we love, do good to, pray right. for people who we're not sure what their intent is? And there's a good chance that some may come with intent that's evil. Probably most come saying, I need help. And how do you, in our real world, walk out the ways of Christ in a really complex scenario like that? And we're still figuring it out, right?
No, that's true. That's a perfect example. That's one of the more difficult things because I've thought it through. And, you know, I love being able to help people that are in need in other nations. That's how the country was founded, in my opinion.
Right.
And then at the same time, if you came up and asked me, okay, well, are you going to take two refugees? I'd be like, oh, I got a 6-month-old and... You know, and I wouldn't right now. And that's
so
a difficult thing for
second.
Me to even say, you know what I'm talking about? And they're not necessarily my enemies even, but there's this issue of space that, and you know, maybe I need to repent, but that's just something in me.
Yeah. And you wouldn't take them because of what? What is it in you that goes, oh, I wouldn't take them right now?
What is it in me?
Yeah.
It's that level of protection. It's that I feel like, because I would probably say to a lot of people, like, no, they're not all bad people. Why are we so scared and all this stuff? Well, not in my house. Like, I'll admit that I'm not at that space right now.
Sure.
I'm just not. And I don't know exactly what that is. I guess it would be this level of protection or, you know, I'm sure some people would look at me and call me selfish or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. That's a really good question. Exactly what that is. I'm not sure what.
I feel like when it comes to some of these issues, like you just brought up, issues that are hot button issues in politics, from the pulpit, from the platform here at Westside, I hear us kind of almost not dance around the issues, but kind of barely get our toes wet in the issues, but in a way that kind of allows for both sides of the political spectrum to not be super offended. I do it in my messages. Is that where we should be, or should we be coming to more of a consensus as leadership on these issues and, you know, being very specific from the platform? And I don't know the answer to that, but I've noticed we all do this where it's like we just kind of throw out there almost like a message that says we need to be more like Jesus regardless of what your politics are. Is that enough? Or do we owe it to the congregation to do more?
I'm glad we have a member of our leadership team here.
Well, I'm going to defer to Pastor Steve on that. We're going to bring him in right now.
Sorry, he's not here. It's all you, Mike. Tell us.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And again, it's one we're all wrestling with, I think, a bit on some level. You know, you go back to asking yourself, what did Christ do in these kind of situations? He lived in a very politically charged region mm-hmm. with a lot of factions and leadership and power groups and political groups, et cetera, constant. And when you look at his life, I don't know that you would say he was necessarily apolitical, but he certainly didn't seem to be fighting for the kingdoms of this world first. He was fighting for bigger things. And some of his comments like, hey, you know, give to Caesar what's Caesar's. He seemed to, on one level, not really care. I don't know if that's accurate or not. But and on another level, he seemed to be incredibly interested in justice, caring for the hurting, the marginalized, the oppressed, yeah. But not tied to political. It wasn't tied to Rome or the Greeks or he was like, this is about justice and right and not about parties. And so as a church, we're trying to figure that out. And of course, everyone comes to the conversation with their opinions, and that starts drawing lines in the sand. And right back to our conversation, how much am I looking at you now as a adversary or an ally? And does that get into the realm where I actually start thinking of you as an enemy when certainly you're not? We just have different views. Hmm. It gets tricky, right?
With Jesus, though, don't you think when he's talking about government, he stays kind of out of it, but the government he's staying out of is an occupying pagan force, which is different than where we're at today. Because sometimes I see...
Says you.
Well, yeah, right?
No.
Because Jesus doesn't shy away from challenging the Jewish religious system, which to me really, I see it as kind of the government structure at a lower level than Rome. You have Rome on top, but they're not... Obviously, they're not friendly to, you know, the Jewish way of life. They're allowing it to happen. They're okay with it going on. But that's, you know, he's not addressing that. But he is addressing Jewish leadership, which has a lot of control over civic life. And so I do see him wading into issues related to the Jewish governmental structure.
So would the equivalent be like, if Jesus was preaching in our church, that he would be a little bit more into talking to the Christians about their, you know, quote unquote political structure or ideology, a way of thinking?
That's what I wonder. You know, I think, yeah, he didn't address Rome, but that was a whole different level. I mean, the Jews weren't engaging in the decision-making process of Rome. I mean, they weren't in control. He was addressing the Jews. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
The big part of that question is I think a lot of the Jews were probably a little bit more of one mind than maybe even the Christian church is today. There's just so many people coming from so many different places, and the Northwest church is so different from a Southern California church as a Texas church. You know, there's a lot of limbs in there. And the difficulty is that a lot of these political issues don't exactly have a perfect answer or a position that I can, maybe not issues, because I think a lot of issues do have a right and a wrong, but I would say a lot of the parties don't necessarily always get either one of them right or wrong either. And so kind of like what Mike was saying, if you begin to take a stance on this one subject with this one idea, then all of a sudden you're aligned with the left, or you're aligned with the right, or you're aligned here and there. And that's where it gets difficult, because all of a sudden they want to say, well, if you agree with the left on this issue, then you agree with the left on this issue, which is not where I'm at today.
Yeah.
There are some situations where I'm like, man, I feel like a flaming liberal, you know, because I feel like I'm way on this side. And then there's other issues, you know, where I'm like, there's no way that I would ever consider the left's point of view on this side. I'm on the other side. And so I think that's where it makes it difficult. I think to answer the original question, if we could have a conversation that was a little bit more issue by issue, or moral by moral, or what Jesus said about this or Jesus said about this, it would be easier. But when it's so easy for all of us, myself included, to just make sweeping judgments when you talk about one subject. You know, I think it would be easier in the church to talk about that if we felt that way, that it was an issue thing, but it's a party thing.
Yeah, and I think the tough part related to this topic of enemies and, you know, true enemies versus all the kind of adversarial categories we were talking about, it gets tough because right now we're so poor at communication, and especially communication that leads to some kind of resolve. Doesn't mean that
we agree.
Who's
poor at communication? The church?
Well, your wife said you are, but
you would. It is not me that is poor at communication.
No, I think in general, you think about, and you can say the media, whoever, but we have so many soundbite conversations, whether it's on televised news, radio news, even online, social media, where a question is thrown out to someone to respond to, and they're given like, you know, 7.8 points of half of a second to
it's
answer.
It's like a hot take culture kind of a thing.
Yeah, and then everyone else is jumping in and yelling. They never even answer the first question, and it's this mess for 9, 10, 11 minutes, and you're going, Nobody answered anything, and now I'm just more mad.
Yeah.
And we just don't communicate. And exactly like you're saying, I think even in the church, if you could sit down and have a conversation about one issue calmly and just talk it out.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting. I think we'd all find out, gosh, we're actually a lot closer to on the same page, most of us, than we might think on surface level.
Yeah. And I think the church can even be a little bit more vocal on some of the stuff that I think that we've kind of started to think, well, oh no, this is, of course, everybody thinks that. I think the church could be a little bit more vocal about racism.
Yeah.
Especially for sure. With a knowledge now that I have, you know, maybe I was ignorant a handful of years ago to think that racism wasn't really as much of a thing anymore. But then I got a Twitter account and I saw what happened in Charlottesville and all those things. And it's like, man, racism is a big thing. And it actually has little seeds in a lot of our hearts that I didn't know existed, you know? And so calling that out is a big deal, I think, and spending a little bit more time on that, not to make our gatherings solely about a lot of these issues, but there are a few things that I think Jesus is abundantly clear on that we can really attack with all of our heart instead of, like you said, and like we do all the time, kind of dancing around them a little bit.
I don't want to come down on the wrong side of history looking back, you know, and to say we should have done more to stand up for certain things, the rights of certain people, that we just kind of, you know, kind of sat back and let it play out. Because as the church, I think we have a voice, not to speak into every single political issue just because it's an issue. But I don't know. I think on some of these very specific cases, mm-hmm. We need to have a voice, you know, and not that we don't already, but I hear it in my own speaking, I guess.
It could just be more trying direct to keep everybody. All, right?
Yeah.
I think we all have the opinions, right? It's just being a little bit more direct.
Yeah, so how does the church do that? I mean, I think locally we're in such a unique place here in Bend where demographically we're just so non-diverse, especially ethnically speaking. We're so non-diverse, it's hard for us to really understand what's going on in some of the more metropolitan areas of our country where they're much more diverse. And some of the tensions, it's just kind of like you said, Ben, I grew up really thinking race was not an issue because I grew up just in a very, at least in what I saw, non-racial context, and it just was a no-brainer of like, what? I had tons of friends who were all kinds of race, close friends, both as a kid and as an adult. It just seemed like a non-issue, but more and more I'm realizing, wow, this is way bigger than I realized. Way, you know, and okay, what do we do with that? Where do we go with that, even as the church locally, but even broader than that, nationally and beyond? Where do we go in the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah. Right. And how do we address some of these issues when they have become tied to political parties in a church where we have probably split down the middle political ideologies. I mean, not all churches are like that. Some churches are just, you know, Republican through and through.
Yep.
Or in other places of the country, maybe they're very much liberal. That's, you know, where churches are at. I feel like here, and the size of church that we are, you know, if you polled who voted for who and got honest answers, it would be pretty split.
I'd say we're for sure split.
You know, and there's probably as many that voted for Trump as are really, really opposed to him in our church. So how do you, and maybe that's not true, but that's, I feel like that's probably not too far off. So how do you lead a church? How do you speak to a church that is tied to parties when issues I don't think should be as tied to parties as they are, you know, man, that's,
you speak in vague terms and you dance around the subject.
Yeah.
And here we are again.
Well, and somehow you have to, I think, pull the spotlight off parties, off politics, and bring it back to kingdom. Right. We're talking about kingdom things here. We're talking about people who are hurting and broken. How do we care for them? How do we forget about the political agendas and motivations for doing that and who's right and wrong, who doesn't get credit, all these things. And it's like, no, how do we just love people? How do we be salt and light in our community? And I think to some it does feel like dancing, and it feels like you're not taking a stand, and you know, whoever stands for nothing stands for something. How does it
falls go? For anything.
Thank you. That's it right there.
You're welcome.
But you know, what else do you do? Because otherwise it seems like you do get sucked into the political fray. And I think there's some people that are gifted and called to really minister in those arenas. I'm not sure that's everybody. Mm-hmm. How do you?
Yeah, and I think part of the issue that plagues the church is the issues that are plaguing kind of the polarized America right now, which is the voices that are trying to polarize things, whether it be CNN or Fox News or these pundits, we're listening to them. Yeah. Within the church, we're listening to them, and then we're bringing this fired up kind of, I'm angry about these issues, into the church. And then as preachers, like, we don't want to dive into that because it's so hot by the time we come together.
Right.
And I almost think we have to encourage, as leaders, we have to encourage people, listen less to that and more to who Jesus was and what God calls us to be and what the kingdom is saying. Not that we're blind to what's going on in our country, but man, there are voices out there that are trying to polarize us as a nation, and it's working. And we as Christians are falling into the trap, I think, as much as anybody.
And Westside Church has done a good thing by creating a space where, you know, quote unquote, conservatives and liberals can coexist together. Like you were saying, you feel like it's probably split down the middle, potentially, with how people voted. That's a good thing. That's a good environment to have created. But at the same time, yeah, it's difficult to, and then you maybe say, well, maybe it's because we've been kind of vague on these different ideas and things. So we haven't created unnecessary enemies, but maybe sometimes it feels like, and I won't even put this on Westside Church, but even in my own life, maybe I haven't just simply acknowledge the real enemy that exists in the room. So yeah, I'm not making them up everywhere I go and everywhere I preach and I teach and all those things, but maybe there's something that is to talk about. And that's a different thing in Bend as well. You know, like, let's be honest, no matter who is in office, a city like Bend is not affected as considerably as a lot of other cities, I would say here. You know, whether it's Obama or it's Trump, we're paddleboarding the river. And, you know, like, there's a higher socioeconomic status in Bend than there is in a lot of places, even in Oregon. You know, it's affected less than a lot of these other places. We're not going to have these big racially charged events that happen. Nothing. I think there was a protest of Trump downtown earlier. Oh, yeah. There was like seven people.
Yeah, that's a fired up group right there.
Exactly. and so it's a different kind of place. So maybe a lot of our job, and I don't know, I'm really wondering this, maybe a lot of our job is just creating awareness that maybe there are some things that, even if they're not affecting us right in the middle of our midst, that we need to be more aware of and more ready to jump to when it comes to justice.
Hmm. Well, Mike, you talked about needing wisdom and grace in dealing with people that are enemies. I think that's true for all these issues, even those that we disagree with. Man, we need more of God's wisdom. We need more of His grace in a time where there's not a lot of grace going around with these issues inside and outside of the church.
And maybe it's a Holy Spirit thing. Maybe we need to listen to the Holy Spirit.
Maybe so. Well, and I do think there's something to compartmentalizing. We've got to be able to, in whatever the conversation is, whatever the situation is, you've got to be able to compartmentalize and see the person on the other side as a human being who you might disagree with or whatever. And yet in your other compartment, be able to see what the issue is and how do we collectively move towards solving, helping, bringing good to that issue. And I don't think we're that good at that all the time. A lot of times I think we lump everything into one thing. And it's like the issues get blended with our emotional feelings towards a person we may disagree with and we get stuck. And again, that's where the enemy's line gets a little blurry and whether we would say, yeah, technically this person is my enemy, probably very rare, but do we feel a sense of adversarial setup with them? Yeah. And gosh, that's when our emotions charge up and it just starts being me against you. And the whole thing breaks down. Communication breaks down. Working towards some kind of resolve of an issue breaks down. And it's more about you and I figuring out who's right and who's wrong. And it just falls apart quick.
Mm. If there is a win in the middle of all this, though, it's that we're talking about it. I really truly believe that.
Yeah.
As I've never heard discussions like this among churches in all my life until a lot of this has happened. I'm not grateful for racial strife. I'm not grateful for all those things. But I do think it's a good thing for the long-term health of the church, the big C church, that we're even just talking about this and we're starting to wrestle with a lot of these issues.
Yeah. Well, Mike, thanks for stopping by today and discussing your message and obviously beyond your message. Good conversation to have. And I think being a part of these conversations is something that we don't want to shy away from. And so as you're listening, those who are listening to this podcast, please comment on this if you have thoughts. And if, as we've talked about this, you want to pipe in, we'd love to hear your comments. So please do that. We're with you every week here, most weeks, Behind the Message. You can listen to any of our sermons online at westsidechurch.org and our podcast at behindthemessage.org.